Well, thank you for letting me speak on this topic as well. We have no disclosures. Ovarian cancer is another common cancer in this country and around the world. It's the most common cause of cancer-related death among the gynecologic cancers. There's over 20,000 women who get this cancer in this country each year, and most die. It's been shown in the gynecologic oncology literature that most patients present with advanced stage disease and their survival is less than 50% in the long term. After debulking surgery in these advanced cases, chemotherapy is able to create a complete remission in most instances, but most patients recur. Therefore, there's a great deal of interest in surveillance to try to find out when recurrence has happened and decide how to manage it at that point. Most of the recurrences occur within 3 years, and thus the surveillance strategies that have been advocated by reputable organizations tends to focus on the first 3 years. The optimal surveillance strategy is not known. There have not been good trials of ovarian cancer patient surveillance after curative intent treatment, with the possible exception of the PSA trial that was reported at ASCO a couple of years ago. There are consensus-based guidelines that have been offered by a number of professional and governmental entities, but many of the societies that you'd expect to have issued guidelines really are not there. These include the Society of Gynecologic Oncologists, ASCO, the Society of Surgical Oncology, and other entities. They do not have any guidelines on their websites or in their literature. As we did in the previous report that I gave a minute ago, we devised a survey based on idealized patient vignettes, and we decided to ask gynecologic oncologists who tend to provide most of the care post-treatment for patients with ovarian cancer how they follow their patients. We surveyed the Society of Gynecologic Oncologists, thinking that they would be the most qualified set of individuals to answer questions about their practice, and in spite of the fact that there are no good randomized trials encompassing all the potential modalities, we thought that they would have the best chance of providing informed expert opinion from practicing clinicians. Again, we obtained IRB approval, and we devised the vignettes featuring patients with different degrees of risk of dying of their ovarian cancer. These are not all different stages. There were two vignettes which featured stage three with optimally debulked cancer and with less than optimally debulked cancer. We sent these by mail rather than by email, and we did not offer any incentives. We insisted that the patients, that the doctors take care, be actively involved in the care of patients with ovarian cancer, and that they were actively following them at the time that they received the survey. We had some questions dealing with motivation in this survey, but I'm not going to present those at this point. And again, each clinician was asked to specify how many times in each post-treatment year all of the various modalities were recommended. This time we included year 10 as well. We had gone through the literature again to find out which modalities were used, and we asked a representative, a fraction of the gynecologic oncology community in St. Louis, and they concurred that this list contained the modalities that were in common use. These were the modalities that we included in our survey instrument. And again, each respondent was asked to identify his or her actual practice if he or she had been visited by a patient with a clinical vignette, as in the hypothetical patients that we presented in our survey. Again, we did simple descriptive statistics. There are 943 members of the society, including candidate members, and we got a response rate of about 34%, which is about average for a survey of this sort. There were certain responders who were excluded, but not very many, and we counted 283 who were evaluable. This is some of the demographic data, mostly the unexceptional appearance, typically middle-aged, mostly male, mostly well-qualified in terms of their membership in various societies, largely academic. And again, this is very symmetrical with the previous talk, showing that there is a significant amount of variability that you see in all of the modalities. Office visit is requested fairly frequently, particularly for the first 3 years. Again, there's a decrease in the frequency of testing for all modalities, with the exception perhaps of those that are very rarely used. The survey was sent out before the trial that I mentioned before of whether CA-125 makes any difference in patient follow-up. And again, I would say that these data give a conservative impression of the variability in actual practice. These are the imaging tests, also relatively commonly used, at least for the chest X-ray and CT, not so much for the transvaginal ultrasound and the MRI. This is the depiction of the data using median and range. And again, you see a gigantic spread from zero office visits to 12 office visits in year one, decreasing to zero minimum to six maximum in year six. And you see similar numbers throughout this table. So again, we think that the data shows a great deal of variability. There's not very much data on how gynecologic oncologists follow their patients in the medical literature. This survey provides that data. Again, there's wide variation. We think that there is a need for well-designed trials to clarify the best way to follow patients after treatment for this deadly cancer. And again, trials are difficult to carry out. They take a long time, they're expensive, and so that's one of the reasons why they are believed not to be something that you read about all the time. Also, it's an under-researched topic, as I mentioned before. The reason that these expensive trials have not been done, in our opinion, has a lot to do with the unwillingness of the National Institute of Health and other funding agencies to support the trials. Therefore, again, we think that professional societies, clinicians, patient advocacy groups, and so forth should have to advocate for these for funding to be appropriated, because anything less than high quality evidence is not likely to influence the actual practice of clinicians, and the problem is not going to go away without the adequate data that is needed to provide evidence-based guidelines that will be able to minimize the misuse, overuse, and underuse of scarce medical resources. Thank you for your attention.
We have a couple of minutes to specifically ask questions about this, although we can come back to it at the end. So if anyone has particular questions for Dr. Johnson, raise them down.
Please.
Questions.
Pardon me? No. The data on ovarian cancer is in press and gynecologic oncology.
Okay.
The data in for the ovarian cancer survey is in the journal Gynecologic Oncology in press. So it won't be long.
The second is, I think you said that with respect to breast cancer, there is good data from trials for appropriate surveillance. So do you not feel that that's robust evidence? And if so, then it seems to me, as seems to be so often the case, there's lots of guidelines, but getting them implemented seems to be the issue. I don't know if just more robust evidence.
Well, I'm not sure either, but those two trials were published in 1994. They both came from Italian organizations. Perhaps the fact that they were not done according to NIH rules might make people think that they were not particularly persuasive, but the NCCN certainly has accepted them. ESMO has based their guidelines on those trials. And in spite of them, we see that there is still a great deal of variability, and I'm not sure how else we're going to eliminate the variability unless we continue to do trials, better trials, modern trials with the current detection methods that were not studied in the 1994 trials or in 1994 publications. Please.
Go ahead.
Well, the reason we did it is because the ovarian cancer follow-up questionnaire was sent before we had SurveyMonkey to use. At least I wasn't aware of its availability, and it was also to a smaller group of clinicians. Now that we tried the electronic version, we like it, and I think it gave us a lot higher response rate. It didn't give us a lot higher response rate, but it gave us a somewhat higher response rate, and we would not have gotten that response rate without repetitively asking for responses.
Okay.